starts from inside. So from your heart and pride, and make the light shine brightly, yo, don't hide. You're a work of art, unforgettable and off the charts.
Welcome to a podcast dedicated to your mental health. I'm Bailey with the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hi, I'm Christy Edwards. I'm the executive director and a therapist at Centers for Children and Families.
Hi, I'm Melanie Size. I'm the marketing and development director at Centers for Children and Families.
Together, we're bringing you tips and tricks on how to navigate this thing called life. This is Center Solutions. Due to the nature of some of the topics that are discussed, listener discretion is advised. Okay, so it's been a while since we've had an almost therapy episode. We've been so busy covering COVID-19, and we've had a lot of special guests on the show. And Christy, explain what almost therapy is. What's the difference in whenever we have a guest on the show and whenever it's an almost therapy episode?
I think our original intent and our current intent was to, at some point, break off and just talk about things that, you know, mental health issues that come up and how we handle those in therapy. So when we have guests, we always make the connection in what they do and the connection to mental health. But this is more about in-depth in therapy, and I kind of come from a position of if I had you in my office and you were coming and talking to me about this. So I think that's important that people know that's what it's kind of like.
And also, this is a COVID edition almost therapy because this topic is a little, the subject matter is heightened.
Yes.
The emotional quotient is heightened by the current situation we're in the lovely year of 2020.
And Melanie named this Angry at 2020.
Angry at 2020. A lot of people are angry at 2020. What is anger? What does that mean, Christy? How does anger manifest?
Okay, so anger is a naturally occurring emotion, and it's one of the things that we learn whenever we're very, very young. You know, we have happy, sad, mad, glad. Those are kind of the first emotions that you learn in your developing ages, you know. So by the time you're 3 years old, you know, even if they talk about the terrible twos, at three, you really understand what being angry or upset is. It's not just, I'm so angry, you know, something like that. It's really about that. So it's a naturally occurring emotion, and it usually happens whenever there's a perceived threat, a perceived slot, or something that goes against something that you believe is fair or just. And that's whenever you have a problem with anger. And what we want to do is like recognize that it's okay to be angry, but it's how you respond, react, how you present yourself with your anger.
And what are some examples of anger related to COVID-19, Melanie?
Oh my goodness. I think the first one that comes to mind is social media. Because if you go through and you look and you see what people are posting, we have a lot going on, obviously, whether it had to do with the pandemic or some of the protests or all of our world events that are going on right now, you have all of these vastly opposing viewpoints, and people are a little bit more open to discussion and comments, and it's hard to watch people argue, whether it's, I mean, it's hard to watch people argue in person, but it's certainly hard to watch, read all the comments, and then you see videos posted, and I think it gets you going, and taking in all of that negativity is very difficult. So I think it makes us mad, you know?
Yeah, I think right now with everything that's going on, people feel like, I've got this grace period in which I can say or be or do anything I want to. And people are going to go, oh, it's because of, you know, COVID and because we've all been locked away. And I look at it as people are opportunistic and they're just taking this time to put things out there, either to stir the pot or just to be able to kind of rant in a way that they wouldn't normally do.
And what are some of the issues that you've seen, Christy, during your telecounseling? It's telecounseling, right?
Telecounseling.
What are some of the issues that you've seen as far as like emotions that have come about during COVID-19?
Well, the two main emotions that we've seen the most are anger, and because it's almost always easy to say, I'm just so angry. And then the other one is grief. I mean, you know, because our lives have not been what they normally were. We've not been able to see the people we wanted to see or do the things we're used to seeing or even feel like we're, you know, fully functioning at work or being as productive as we want. So I just think a lot of people, and especially males, can sometimes turn to just being angry because they don't have to worry about really digging deep to say exactly what that is. Just so angry or I'm pissed.
Can you talk more about that? What if you don't like to show emotions?
That makes me think of when somebody will say, I don't cry. If I cry, it's because I'm angry. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you're not allowed to have the other emotions because it's sort of a sign of weakness. But anger is acceptable on some level, right?
It is.
Yeah.
We don't want it to be, but it is. But so, you know, whenever you want to kind of dig deeper, and that's what we want people to come to therapy for, if somebody that's close to you that you trust tells you it appears as though you're angry more often, or it's kind of reached another level at which you're really being verbal with it, or it's become physical or whatever. You know, Melanie and I talked about this earlier today. I said sometimes you take your anger out on the people that you love and trust at a time when we want you to be able to turn to the people that you love and trust for them to be able to tell you, you've reached a level that I think that we need to reach out for help. So what we need to do is look and determine, is this something that's embedded in something that's happened in the past and it's just now coming out? Because we're all facing things that, you know, traumas that may have happened in the past, or times that we were denied something because, you know, for whatever reason. So we want to be able to come in and we want to say, what's really going on? Let's look at it. And can you come up with some emotional vocabulary words that would say something other than I'm so angry? I'm frustrated. I was embarrassed. I'm scared. I'm lonely. You know, I'm fearful of, you know, what's going to happen with my family if I lose my job or we lose our house. So we want to equip people to come up with exactly what they're dealing with, and that way we can focus. Just being angry and ticked off, it's like, okay, there's a million different things that could trigger you. How can we start working with you?
But it's not anger that's bad. It's the way we handle
exactly.
anger, right?
Yeah,
it's just the way our coping skills are and how we allow that to manifest itself and present itself and how we deal with people.
Yeah, if you've got somebody that's approaching you on the street and it's going to, you know, rob your family or whatever, some anger is going to be a motivator to protect, you know, and that sometimes comes with that fight, flight, or freeze, you know, and that is a good thing, you know, and anger can keep you from being taken advantage of. But once again, it's not, there's, you know, it's opposite ends of the spectrum, being a little bit angry and being so angry that you lose control of your ability to rein yourself back in. That's, you know, we're looking at all along that spectrum.
How does anger relate to stress? You mentioned sometimes you might be feeling angry and it's kind of a displaced emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So how does stress and anger go hand in hand?
Well, if you do not relieve stress, and if it just keeps, you know, we always talk about the layering effect. If you just have more stress on top of more stress, and then your kids break a rule, or your wife spends too much money, or whatever, and it just layers, 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 your stress is, it's not going to be stress. It's no longer you're stressing me out. You're ticking me off, and I am angry, and I'm cutting up your cards, I'm grounding you, taking your phone. Everything is catastrophized. It's bigger whenever it becomes full-blown anger.
Why is the wife the one doing it?
Or the husband.
She saw some shade at you, Christy.
Sorry.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm the wife. It doesn't matter. So
whoever is spending too much money on makeup and shoes, whoever that might be.
There's a lot of different scenarios that could come up, truly. I always think of road rage because that's something that comes out a lot. And these days, I feel like there's all kinds of different rage things that we see on video online. So it's really interesting, and something we talked about earlier when we did our session with Amanda Mason at KMID, is we talked about how people are affected sometimes by the way their anger portrays itself in a public setting, and how it can affect your job or your family life or, you know, your reputation. So we talked about some coping skills and how Christy can help people through, let's not do that.
That's true. What we'll start with most often, and, you know, anger management got such a negative connotation for a long time because it's like, you need anger management, you know, and there was all the movies made about getting anger management and all the buzzwords that you had to use to try to bring yourself down. The reality is everybody has to learn to manage all of their emotions, or you can't function in society. Can you imagine just being able to go off and say whatever you want to whoever you want to, and not ever worry about what the, you know, consequence might be. So you have to learn to monitor and bring those in and have them at a safe level. So in therapy, we always say, don't be a victim of your own self-destruction, right? So if you're hell-bent on self-destruction, then don't come back and say, I'm the victim. Have ownership of what you've done. After we say that, we take everybody through this whole thing is like, you know, let's talk about the psychosomatic or the physiological symptoms that having that much anger brings about. You know, your cortisol level goes up, you know, and then, you know, once other things can happen, your cholesterol can go high, your blood pressure can go high, and any number of medical things that can go wrong. So if you look for a healthy outlet, Melanie is a runner, so she says she goes and runs. I don't run, so I turn on my music really, really loud and sing at the top of my lungs, you know,
Something physical, that's what we talk about.
Something physical.
Just to be able to, yeah. I mean, it'd be great if everyone had a punching bag in the back, but
yeah.
That's why running, it's good for me because I feel like I'm running either on top of it or away from it, whatever it is. I'm counting it out. So, but then there's, you know, singing.
There's singing.
Yelling. There's, yelling can be good.
Yeah, yell into your pillow. Yeah. If you get in your shower, yell, cry, do whatever it is. You know, and when we're talking to parents about kids, we're always like, let them have an outlet. When I was growing up, it was like, you better not. You better get control of yourself. You know,
oh,
what?
Heck yeah.
Get control. We don't do that here.
Yeah.
We don't slam a door. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't talk back. We don't do some of those things. We don't scream in our pillow.
Right.
We have control. So let your child, equip your child with what they can do. I mean, can you go out? Can you run around the block? Can you hammer, you know, a nail into a piece of wood and pull it out and hammer it back in, you know, a jillion times? Do you let your kids slam their door?
Do we let kids slam the door?
Well, I mean, every parent has to decide what they're willing to put up with. Because if you let them slam the door, they may, like, at some point be strong enough to the door to come off the hinges. But if you just go in your room and that's just really the biggest act of defiance when you're angry, that's a small thing, you know?
That feels so hard to imagine letting your kids slam the door.
Yeah. Oh, that never was allowed at my house because my dad would say, I'll take your door off your hands before you slam the door.
I don't even want to know.
I might try that at work.
I don't think I would be here today to try that.
But if you go in, if you just say, I'm angry, I'm going to my room, and you give it a little extra shove, you know, or if you let them go in and punch a pillow or scream in a pillow instead of saying, you better suck it up. And because then, once again, we're teaching our kids to stuff your naturally occurring emotion.
So we need to own those emotions.
Yep. Yeah.
We need to let kids feel that or express them a little bit more than maybe what we were. That's a teaching lesson for me because that feels a lot like disrespect, which is very hard to let go of.
Right.
Or to understand where those boundaries are. I have a scenario for you.
Okay.
So let's think of Thanksgiving holidays. People getting together. Not everybody likes each other, right?
My blood pressure is rising. Continue.
Just thinking about it. You're like, oh, great. So-and-so is just bringing, like, drinks again. Thanks. You're awesome. Thanks
they
for
showed
pitching
up with us.
Or whatever. So, yeah, thanks for bringing the ice. We've been cooking all night, but it's okay. And don't bother to help clean up. I mean, right?
Yeah.
That's all the whole thing. And then you've got family issues that come into play. You've got all these other people. So when someone talks to you, I've had friends that joke about, you know, I call my doctor, got some Xanax because Thanksgiving, and just the jokes. But what are your suggestions for people when they have family gatherings? We've also talked about how at weddings or funerals, there's all this heightened emotion, and a lot of times it's anger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's anger, old feuds come back up, and even childhood, you know, parent-child relationship dynamics are there. Just strange things. So how do you tell people to cope?
Okay, so I want everybody to remember whatever your role was in your family system is what the role is you usually fall back in whenever there's a family get-together. So if you were the one that always tried to keep the peace or you were the one that always caused the problem, you're going to fall back into that, you know, which then makes everybody else fall into their role. So I always recommend when everything is going to happen that somebody be brave enough to say, things have been bad in the past. I really would love for this family to have a nice Thanksgiving. So can we talk about, and Melanie, we've talked about this before, that we're not going to talk about each other's kids. We're not going to talk about, you know, we're not going to talk about politics, religion, some of those. Just set some ground rules. And then if you have somebody that's not willing to follow those ground rules, then they're not really
engaged.
Engaged, yes.
So it's almost you have to have a pre-plan.
I have to have a pre-plan.
You know, here's everyone's menu, and then here are your rules.
And you can sign off on that.
Okay, sign. Please sign before you enter.
That's the perfect world. So if you have somebody that's just coming in there and they're just determined, this is the first time we're all together since XYZ happened, and I'm going to have my say, then what you might say is, all right, there's a time and a place for that, and it is not right in the middle of dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, it's all about trying to be responsible, mature, and not discounting. Because if people really have grievances that they want to talk about, but it's not at dinner.
Right.
And not everybody needs to be a player. Your kids don't need to see it.
Sure. I'm just like thinking that. This has always been an issue. It's always been a thing. But now 2020 has presented itself with a lot of heated topics that are just, I mean, on an exponential level of, we all feel very strongly about whatever it is our belief system is. So I can imagine holidays this year are going to be interesting.
Yeah.
If we're allowed to gather.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's good to have some armor there so that you know how to cope and how to handle and maybe take a step back, do a little grounding exercise.
Mm-hmm. And then always say, as many different people are in the room, is as many different opinions you're going to have about whether we should go back to work during COVID or whether we should have, you know, done such and such, whatever. So everybody is entitled to their opinion, and as long as it's not causing physical harm to anyone else, you'll let them have their opinion. Because what usually happens is you start trying to convince somebody that I'm right. My side or my way of thinking makes the most sense. That's never going to fly.
Especially on social media.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've never seen a mind changed.
No.
I haven't yet.
Ever.
You just send the congratulations little animated icon. Congratulations, you changed your mind.
Yes, yeah. Youngest son is very competitive, and whenever he would play basketball and stuff in high school, he would like throw his hands up in the air looking at the referee like, what do you mean? You know, whatever. So finally the referee, which he didn't have to, he could have thrown his butt right out of the game. He walked over and he just said, listen, you're an awesome basketball player. I love, you know, watching you play. But I'm going to tell you right now, I am never going to change a call that I've made because you throw your hands in the air. So it was a great teaching moment. But, I mean, and it definitely changed the way he acted. So it was basically, don't throw a fit and expect somebody to go, oh, yeah, you're right. How about you just say, we have different views. That doesn't mean we don't love each other and that we can't be together. But these topics really probably should be taken off the table.
That's interesting. There's so many physical effects from anger.
Mm-hmm.
Christy talks a lot about the fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting because, I don't know, I guess maybe we're all a little bit of both. Maybe some of us are inclined one direction or the other, but gosh, fear, anxiety, excitement, all of that is that place. Adrenaline that happens. But. And then that's the stress hormones and cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many different things. Heart rate, blood pressure. I guess you could sweat. I mean, I don't know. We're all different, but I think we all feel that physical experience. I know, and Amanda earlier was talking about how she feels it in her throat. Mm-hmm. I always feel like my heart starts beating if I get angry. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just can feel my heart.
A lot of people recognize that, right? Because your blood pressure does increase.
Yeah.
It immediately starts going, and that's cortisol and adrenaline. It's like, you know, preparing to fight your battle, right?
True.
So what we want to be able to do is teach people that not everything is a battle. So don't gear up for battle unless you have to. So find a way to bring that back down, whether it's breathing, whether it's walking away, whether it's leaving the house saying, I'll be back in 10 minutes, I've got to drive around, go to Sonic, get a coat, but I'll be back, and we can continue, but I'm losing control.
And it's hard right now because we don't have those outlets. If you're starting to feel angry or stressed, a lot of people go to the gym or they do a lot of things, and you can't do that right now.
No.
So, well, like, you can kind of, but do you want to?
Are gyms open like it?
I don't
75%? Are
I
they
think
all
it's,
the way
it's still really limited.
Okay.
I feel like it's hard. It's hard to congregate. It's hard to get together.
And it's hard to, like, just get in that mental state where you're like, okay, you know what? I'm feeling angry. I'm stressed today. I'm going to go walk. I'm going to go run at the gym. And then in the back of your mind, you're like, how sanitary is this machine? You know,
everything comes with fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we want to make sure people don't go, well, I can't do that. I'm going to go home and have a couple of beers or a couple of drinks, and then that might turn into something else. And then, you know, your level of being able, your inhibitions go away, and then you're...
Then you're coping, not coping.
Not coping at all. It's like, I'm going to say whatever I want to say, you know.
And then there's guilt after
that.
Right.
So it can lead to all any number of things that are not healthy unless you figure out a way to express it in a good way. And you can.
Have you seen situations where people have had this long-term anger and it's really affected them health-wise? Or
yes. I guess it was about 2 years ago that I got a call that one of my longer-term clients had had a heart attack and died, and found out it was in the middle of yelling at his daughter about getting a speeding ticket. And it was literally, he was so angry because he, you know, that he just, like, basically had a heart attack.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So, jeez. Once again, those were some layers and some years of things of not being able to take it. And then... being angry that your child got a speeding ticket is one thing, but being so angry that you can't even take a breath in which to recognize that you're reaching a danger point. Mm-hmm. So it's a real thing that it does happen.
Is anger, I hope I can word this correctly, is anger like a very forefront natural emotion, or does anger usually stem from another emotion?
No, anger is a naturally occurring. It's basically one of the things.
It's caveman.
It is caveman. Mm-hmm. You're right, because you have to be able to fight off the dinosaur, right?
Right. So I would be pretty angry, yeah.
I have to be angry enough to protect myself and my family, and that goes back to the fight, flight, or freeze. You know, am I going to run away from the dinosaur? Maybe if I think I can get away, but if he's going to eat my family, I have to stay and fight. I can't freeze, or same thing happens. So it can be good in certain situations, and we want people to be aware that it can be good. And when it's a motivator for change, it can be good. But when it's destructive or self-sabotaging or physically damaging or hurtful to another person, that's kind of what we're talking about is, you know, we've got the anger at 2020, which kind of just simmers underneath. But for those people that... if there's something else and then this triggers it and it turns more dangerous, those are the people that we really need to call us, because we can help you with that.
Because there are people that kind of live in a state of of anger. Or another thing we talked about earlier was suppressing your anger, how dangerous that is, how there's a pendulum of two different opposite ends. Like, you are a person who's constantly angry and constantly, you know, you're the get-off-my-lawn guy, or you're the person that just isolates, just removes yourself from people, and that's not healthy either.
Right. And some of those people are the ones who were taught as a child that showing any strong emotion was bad, and so they learned to stuff it. And at some point, the lid just gets ripped off.
Pressure cooker,
and it's going to all come out. So once again, whenever I keep using the analogy of the balloon that you have to have the relief valve, or the volcano that whenever you notice the lava rising to the top, you've got to figure out a way to let it simmer down. If you don't, at some point that's going to blow, or that balloon is going to pop, and then there's going to be collateral damage from that. So it's always better for us to be able to, you know, teach you a coping skill or a trick to relieve some of that pressure.
So is that kind of step one to anger management? If someone comes to you with anger issues, is that kind of step one to find out what's going on?
We usually do it's called a hostility inventory, which makes it sound so much worse than it really is. But, you know, just to kind of see what their coping skills are in certain, you know, we give them scenarios and they say, this is, you know, what would be likely to happen. So we want to determine upfront what level they're at. So if this is somebody that was always, every response was, I'm going to kick his butt, you know, but that's not one of them. But it's the highest action level that there is. then we know we've got our work cut out for us, because that's probably long term.
Do you have an example of the scenarios you give?
One of those is like somebody cuts you off in traffic.
Oh, good.
You know, what do you do? Do you chase them? You know, so a lot of people go, I chase them down, try to run them off the road,
people
things
really,
like that.
People really say that, because mm-hmm. I've run into those people. If I ever cut you off, I promise you it was an accident.
Right.
I do that on purpose. Right. Please leave me alone. I'm scared.
We have a lot of people that are mandated to come for anger top management, you know, through courts or through, if you want to keep your job, you will go for this or whatever. So they have to be pretty honest. And so we determine what your hostility level is, and so we know where to start. So, and I forgot what the whole beginning. Oh, what are we going to do? We do the hostility inventory. We also talk about their previous coping skills. And then we talk to them about where do you feel it, what psychosomatic or what physiological symptom do you feel first. Melanie said she gets hers in her chest. Mm-hmm. Amanda got hers in her throat. I don't know where I'd get mine. I think mine's mostly in, you know, like a headache or something.
I thought you were going to say your feet. I'm like, that's weird.
It's my
feet. I want to kick somebody.
I want to kick somebody. Yeah. But, you know, we talk to them. So then... Because people will say that I just exploded. I don't know where it came. So what we need to do is walk them back a few paces and say, let's look at this. First of all, you're kind of always simmering right below being really, really angry. So it doesn't take much to put you over. And, you know, your history of acting out on your anger is high. So whatever. And you've never been taught how to recognize the physiological symptoms before you get here. So we're going to talk to you about some of those things. And we'll even get out an outline of a, you know, like of a body, and we'll say, okay, let's think about where do you feel things. You know, a lot of people will clench their fist, or, you know, they'll bite their lip or clench their jaw, you know, or tap, you know, shake their leg, something like that. So your body's giving you a warning sign, or you might break out into a sweat.
That's good information. Mm-hmm. So what's some basic advice you would give to someone who feels like anger is an issue, is a regular ongoing issue?
Right. If you think it's an issue, it's beyond being an issue, because usually we're the last people to recognize. People will go, you seriously have an anger problem, you know, or you're boss or your parents or your siblings or your spouse or somebody is, you have a problem. So if you recognize it and come to us, own it and claim it and say, I want to make a change, is the first sign of being able to recover from some of that. So we're not trying to take away your personality, because that's what people say. I'm just known for popping off. I'm just known for being, you know, the one that's always saying the thing. Nobody. Okay, how about you don't be a victim of your own self-destruction?
It's so funny to me when people say their personality is a certain way, mm-hmm. because I feel, to me, your personality is not your behavior,
right.
necessarily. And
right.
sometimes it's the behavior that is mm-hmm. not good,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little bit toxic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I cannot remember who the psychologist that said this, but they basically say we're hardwired from conception, and that is the framework of the picture. And so, like, if you're going to be an introvert or an extrovert or something like that, it's already predetermined.
Wow.
At conception. But you get to color in the lines with your behavior. And so,
do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree. That's what therapy does, right?
Uh-huh.
So we're going to take what we believe was your framework at conception, and then we can say if you're a little bit more prone to certain things, we're going to look and we're going to try to determine, have things happened to you? Have you had traumas that mm-hmm. have caused you to be angry for protection? You know, did you live in Iraq or Afghanistan when you never knew whether a bomb was coming your way? So you had to be angry, so you had to be tough, you couldn't show fear. So what is the point? What is the purpose of your anger? You know? And if there's really no purpose, we're going to talk to you about then what you need to
you're
be doing instead
it.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about keeping a journal about your outbursts?
Mm-hmm.
You recommend that?
We talk about journaling for everything.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can determine whether, you know, it's because you're, what is it, the halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. You know, are you likely to bust out in anger if you're any of those things? And whenever you do a journal and you can start looking for that, you can go, yeah, I didn't eat. I was already angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
angry.
Was I angry about something else? And I let something kind of grow it, you know. Am I feeling any of those emotions that go with being lonely? you know, so did I overreact because of these things? And was I, did I not sleep at all? And everything is too big.
Which is happening a lot right now, during ever since the beginning of 2020, really, where everyone's sleep schedule's off, work schedule, everything.
And once again, whenever you're journaling, you're keeping up, you know, I got my butt chewed out at work today because of something I didn't do, and I came home and I yelled at my wife and my kids, even though they had nothing to do with it. So then you can start trying, you know, okay, so on the way home, I'm going to take off the work hat, I'm going to put on my dad and husband hat or wife hat.
whatever it is. You gotta do.
And I'm going to go home and I'm going to really take some deep breaths. And so when I walk in, I am just the role that I'm meant to play at home. So it is, I mean, it's vast, you know, and working with somebody that has a true anger problem is very rewarding because whenever they get it and they might turn the corner, it's pretty amazing.
So maybe someone who, I'm not the expert, just asking the expert here, but maybe someone who is is dealing with an issue and has a problem at work, would it be a good idea to recommend maybe go find something to, before you come home, 10-minute walk, something that just gives you that transition period? Because I know when you're dealing with work and then all of the things that are going on now and, you know, responsibilities of the world as an adult, and you might walk into a house and
you get hit with it.
Anyone that's there, whether it's your wife, your stay-at-home husband, whoever it is, I don't know, a girl can dream. your kids, and they're like at you immediately. Either they have problems or questions or anything, and you just need a time. I mean, I can see why that might be an issue in that pressure cooker.
Yes, we're therapists. Are all therapists? Therapists are always, please erase that, always big on talking about transitions, how important they are to be fair to yourself and fair to other people. My husband used to come in, and, you know, the kids would be waiting for him at the door, and he'd say, let me get out of my work clothes and get into my shorts or whatever it might be. So, you know, he would go in there, you know, he would sit down on the bed, take his clothes off slowly some days, you know, and I would always just say, leave him alone while he's changing, because that way, whenever he came out, he's ready to fully engage in certain things. And let's remember, what is it, you know, back in the 50s or 60s, dad walked in, he read the newspaper and had a scotch and wine, or somebody brought him a drink, and then he was ready. So that far back, we knew that there was an importance of transitions. So, yes, always transition. And when you don't, you just exhaust yourself. Because you're just going from one thing to the other.
That seems so important to me, just to have those transitions between stressors. Because you can really, especially now, to me, while we were in the period of quarantine, we didn't have a lot of transition. Every day ran into one another, and then you didn't, you're seeing the same people every day. It was like Groundhog Day, and, you know, I mean, there's only so much, like we said, banana bread you can make, and you're missing your social interaction, and so, yeah, there wasn't a lot of transition. So I think that's given us a little bit of a build on some of the anger from other emotions that we've experienced, like the isolation and a little bit of loneliness and maybe just different fears and sadness. So that that builds into anger, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, it does, because it's frustration. And it's anxiety, and it's, when is my life going to go back to the way it was? I liked it better back then. And then if you hit Groundhog Day over and over again, and then it layers and layers and layers, and then one of your kids breaks your favorite candy dish, I'm just saying, you know, then it's like that's the thing that could tip the scale, or your wife or your husband forgets that they're supposed to be bringing home milk, you know, and in and of itself, it's such a small thing, but it's the, you know, cumulative effect that can then just turn you.
What advice would you give to someone who is noticing that their partner has become more angry?
And that's hard. It's like I said at the beginning, if you have the kind of relationship that in which you could say, I'm concerned because this is what I'm seeing. And if you don't have to worry about, they're going to say, oh, I'm not the crazy one here. I'm not the one with anger management problem. You're the one with anger management problem.
It doesn't make them more angry.
Yes, exactly. So pick a time whenever you, if they bring it up, if they're like, you know, I've really got to do something because I got in trouble at work today, or I've noticed that my friends are not wanting me to be a part of, you know, maybe what they were, just say, okay. Just like with anything else, if you have an issue, let's find a solution. And, you know, therapy can help this. So having, you know, just being self-aware. And that's really probably the biggest part of it is, you know, recognizing that you do have a problem and then wanting to make the change and then being willing to put in the hard work. Because you're going to have to be putting up stop signs, because whenever you get angry and you usually go one way, you're going to have to put a stop sign that says, no, we've cut off this avenue. You've got to go to a healthy coping skill.
So just like all the roads in Midland.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which make you angry.
We need an emotional inventory journal. I think maybe we do a session on that. Mm-hmm. I think that would be.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I mean, just, I think, we could have a journal or maybe a calendar and write down the emotions that are heightened. Didn't you mentioned something about an inventory, but on your anger, but I mean, there's so many different emotions. Yeah. I just think that would be an interesting way to have some introspection, self-awareness.
Well, and it's just like anything else, whenever you're going through anxiety or depression or anything else, whenever you're going, this was a good day, what made this day different than the other day? And when you can look back, if you've kept a journal or an inventory, you can go, ah, this was it. I started the day off with this. Mm-hmm. I had a flat tire, and I had to wait for somebody to come and get me to work or whatever. So you can, then the next day you're like, I really have no reason to be angry because I got to work on time. I had a great day at work. I came home. We had my favorite meal and whatever. So you're really just trying to see what makes good days and what makes bad days. Whenever you have a pattern of what makes your day bad or makes you angry, then we know how to attack it. So, yeah, it's important that you have that inventory. If you can get some people to do it. I don't journal.
You have to want to.
You have to want to.
Yeah, I don't journal. Mm-mm. That would make me angry to journal.
Mm-hmm. Did you get up on journaling?
What advice, Christy, would you give to someone, a coping mechanism? What would you give them right now who is feeling angry? What would you, something they can do right now?
I think the first thing that I would tell somebody would be, to name exactly what's going on. Don't just say, I'm angry, I'm angry. You know, if you're really angry, that's fine, but kind of dig deeper. What is really going on? Were you embarrassed because you weren't prepared at work? Did somebody call you out for, you know, not doing something? And I know this is more than what you really wanted to hear.
No,
a coping skill right now would be get out of your house, go for a walk, clear your mind, you know, and try to change your frame of reference and come back and try to be in a different place. That is the easiest. You can always get out of the situation that you might feel like it's feeding. So to go get a walk, take a walk, or go get a drink of water, go sit on your back patio and listen to the birds, pet your dogs, your cats, whatever it might be.
I think it's kind of nice to get away from your normal space to like go to the Sibley Center or to, to another nature area or a park, or get in your car and drive and listen to the music.
Yes. Displacing yourself from the place. That if I sit right here, it's going to grow and grow and grow. I've got to take my mind off of that. So, and then in the process, you're retraining your brain to not sit in the middle of that, but to make a move.
I saw Christy kind of lose it earlier today.
Oh, do tell.
I'm going to have to share. So when we were doing our Zoom news... Christy's she's very serious and talking about this very serious topic, and there's a fly that's just kind of hanging out and zoom right in front of her and just wouldn't leave her alone. And so she like tried to swat it and broke her ruler.
I did break my ruler. And then you know what the fly did? Landed on my nose.
Okay. It was so funny, but I'm like, oh, you broke your ruler in during the anger discussion.
2020 is that fly.
Yeah.
Yes.
2020 is that fly.
So true.
It just kept zoom, 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 zoom.
I know. It was zooming on the zoom, zoom. Yeah. So.
Do you have any unique or interesting coping mechanisms?
Let's see. Unique or interesting?
Since you've been doing this a really long time, I'm sure you've heard of some rather unusual coping techniques.
Okay. So maybe the most interesting thing I can think of are the people who you feel like they need to bring into play something that changes their feeling. So like if you're feeling angry and you're flustered and you're, you know, whatever. So I have a person that does hot wax and puts his hands in hot wax, because it's like a, you know, because sometimes his go-to was to swat at his kids or at his wife or whatever. And he was just like, these are my, I can't remember what he called them, but these are the things that do damage to the people I love. So he would, whenever he was feeling like that, he would turn it, he had these paraffin baths, and he would get really hot and he would stick his hands in there.
He has them at home?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's kind of
And
hot.
He would put his hands in that hot wax. I mean, not to burn himself, but it was just a reminder to stop thinking about that and then to have that so then he could not use those. I think that's a little extreme. It worked for him, yeah. And you know, and that was not a recommendation of mine. He came up with it. I said, "You're going to have to figure something out," and that's what he did. But that's kind of the most extreme that I know of, you know, of a coping skill that you know somebody's done it. Uh-huh. Then I've had people whenever they're in the middle of something and they're going to lose it, they'll try to say the alphabet backwards or count from 100 backwards.
Oh, that would make me even more mad.
I don't even know if I can do that without concentrating.
I would be like, "No, well, I'm really angry now."
That's the point, because whenever you're using your mind and you're thinking about it, you're also slowing your breathing. You know, and just like whenever we did the five, you know, things for anxiety, you look for the five things to, you know, that you see, hear, smell, touch, taste, or whatever.
The grounding. Right.
The grounding uh-huh. exercise. You know, once again, whenever you slow your heart rate down and your breath rate down, then your anger goes down as well. So, you know, just coming up with some of those
it's a distraction.
It's a distraction,
really.
Yeah.
That's good. We all need a little distraction.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people that love animals like we do, just going to pet your dog or something. Now, there are those people that are very angry. They'll walk out the door and kick the dog because they're going to take it out on somebody. So I never recommend that. But, you know, if you can go out and pet your dog or take your dog for a walk or something like that. Just you need to know the things that do soothe you, and that's part of what we do. What is relaxing? Do you take a bath? Do you read a book? Do you listen to music? Do you go for a walk? Do you pet your dog? You know,
and everyone's different.
And everyone's different. Do you make a glass of tea? Do you sit on your back patio? Do you phone a friend?
Right.
You know, whatever it might be.
You're so right. Everyone's different. So remember that and reach out to centers if you feel like you can't, anger is something you can't deal with on your own. They could definitely help mm-hmm. you with those anger issues. Mm-hmm. And please remember to be kind to your mind during these troubling times. Center Solutions is a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. Post-production work is done by Bailey Hennis. Content is provided by Melanie Size and Christy Edwards. Contact Centers for Children and Families at 432-570-1084 or the Recording Library 432-682-2731. Email Melanie with questions you want answered on the show at msize@centerstexas.org. That's msize@centerstx.org. Both nonprofits are on all social media platforms. See you next time.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by the Georgia Radio Reading Service, GARS. Hello, I am Herbert Gilmore, and this is Prevention Magazine. I'll be reading articles for the December 8th, 2020 episode of Prevention Magazine. The first article is Editor's Note, Looking Ahead. The editors who work on this magazine are such experienced health journalists that it can be tough to really wow them. That's why I love the article we do every December on the biggest health breakthroughs of the year. By the time we narrow the list, everything on it makes the staff say amazing. You can see 2020's innovations on page 62. But I also want to tell you how our annual list inspired two exciting things prevention is doing in 2021. We're committing to brain health. This year, we're highlighting an early detection blood test for Alzheimer's. Astounding, right? The disease is so scary that people often whisper its very name, as used to happen with cancer. But without more open conversations around brain health, the people this test can help won't ever get it. So, in 2021, we're partnering with Us Against Alzheimer's, a nonprofit that works to make brain health a priority for you, scientists, and the people who fund research. Start with our Brain Fog article, page 48, and stay tuned for ways to join this fight. You can now buy Prevention CBD. Last year, one of the innovations we were excited about was the formation of the U.S. Hemp Authority, the country's first organization dedicated to regulating the booming CBD industry. Later, when we started talking about whether we should launch the line of CBD products, we knew whatever we might offer had to earn its approval. We worked closely with the Natural Native, a company with stellar farming and manufacturing practices, and this fall, all the products we were hoping to release earned U.S. Hemp Authority certification. Prevention has always been open-minded about health, but we're also cautious about what we recommend. Remember those hard-to-impress editors? They're looking out for you always. That was Editor's Note, Looking Ahead by Sarah Smith. The next article is Give Thanks by Renee Moorfield. Close an unprecedented year on a positive note with Prevention and the Global Wellness Institute's The Wellness Moonshot, a world free of preventable diseases. Though this has been a challenging year, science teaches us that living with gratitude enhances our mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual health. When we pause to be genuinely grateful, that simple act reminds us that we belong to a much larger human community. But doing thankfulness is also crucial. Although gratitude is believed to be a universal capacity that lies within each of us, we understand and express it best through our actions. Try these practices. Thank yourself. Identify the progress you've made this year, whether you've taken care of your own health, found calm in a stressful situation, or helped loved ones or colleagues grow alongside you. Pat yourself on the back. You deserve it. Show gratitude to others. Through a text, phone call, or gift, thank at least one person who has inspired you this year. You thank you will create a new reservoir of energy and well-being within you both. Share abundance. Identify your unique gifts and resources and offer them to others in need, especially within your community, without seeking anything in return. This is one of the most rewarding and affirming mindsets. Think bigger. Thankfulness is the connective tissue of thriving families and workplaces. Turn transactional relationships into true partnerships and build trust with people around you by thanking them freely and often. That article was Give Thanks by Renee Moorfield. The next article is Natural Benefits of Oranges by Erica Ellen Sansone. You know oranges are bursting with vitamin C. Just one supplies about 90% of our daily needs, but they also contain high levels of flavonoids, antioxidants, that can strengthen your immune system and stave off inflammation, says certified nutritionist Ferdinanda Brusamaline Larson, MS, an assistant professor and chair of the Department of Nutrition at Bastyr University, California. Try her ideas. Invigorating body scrub. Wake up with the fresh scent of oranges when you use this all-natural body scrub. Combine 1/4 cup of coconut oil. Run container under hot water until soft enough to stir. 1 cup raw sugar. And a zest of 1 medium orange. Mix well and use in the shower as an exfoliant for your feet, legs, arms to slough dry winter skin. Rinse off with warm water. Store leftover scrub in lidded jar for up to 2 weeks at room temperature. Natural cleaning product. Save your orange peels to make this multi-purpose cleaner for counters, glass, and mirrors. While not a proven virus killer, it will make your home shine and smell great. Fill a 16-ounce lidded jar halfway with orange peels and pour 1 to 1.5 cups of white vinegar over them. Let sit for a week, then put in a spray bottle. Keeps for 1 month. Immune boosting syrup. Use this delicious, versatile syrup as a marinade or drizzle it over cakes and yogurt or into cocktails. Wash and chop 1 orange in a saucepan. Combine with 1 4- to 5-inch piece fresh ginger. Sliced into coins, 1/4 cup of honey, 2 cups of water. Bring to a boil, then simmer 25 to 30 minutes. Let cool to room temp before straining and storing in the fridge in a lidded jar. Keeps for 1 week. That article was Natural Benefits of Oranges by Erica Ellen Sansone. The next article is Natural Fixes The Truth About Food Additives by Andrew Weil, M.D. Adding substances to foods make them taste better, look more appealing, or last longer goes back nearly as far as our species does. Distant ancestors preserved meat by smoking it. For instance, the addition of enhancers to food shifted into overdrive early in the 19th century as new synthetic compounds, including those mentioned here, offered nearly limitless ways to alter our food. Color enhancers. Artificial colors, many of which are derived from coal tar, petroleum, and other questionable sources, were developed to reduce costs and avoid toxicity from older metallic pigments containing mercury, copper, and arsenic. Testing by watchdog agencies such as the Food and Drug Administration revealed that some of the newer colorants came with their own hazards. Some, many, are now banned. Manufacturers still add dyes to make food look appealing, but the chemicals used to create certain colors are energetic molecules, and many of these can damage DNA. In turn, that can injure the immune system, accelerate aging, and increase cancer risk. I suggest avoiding artificially colored foods. Flavor fortifiers. Artificial flavors are typically harmless. However, their use may indicate low quality or overly processed foods. If the label lists artificial flavors, make sure the food doesn't also contain other less desirable ingredients. Healthy sweeteners. Zero calorie sweeteners represent an important exception to the typically harmless artificial flavor rule. In a recent review of 37 studies over the past 10 years, consumption of them was linked to higher risk of weight gain, obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. These compounds may also hurt the gut microbiome. If you use non-caloric sweeteners, I recommend monk fruit or erythritol, a sugar alcohol. Natural sweeteners like pure maple syrup are ideal. Just use them sparingly. Shelf life boosters. Preservatives and stabilizers help maintain the taste, texture, nutritional properties, and appearance of food. They prevent spoilage, protect against foodborne illness, and maintain freshness and color. However, this category also has its snares. For instance, nitrates and nitrites found in processed meats and monosodium glutamate may play a role in migraines. Other preservative, propionate, is commonly used in baked goods to slow down mold growth. A 2019 study suggests it may contribute to rising levels of obesity and diabetes. Seek foods with natural preservatives such as vitamin C and E. The bottom line. Many food additives are rated generally recognized as safe, GRAS, by the FDA. However, per a 2014 study, 1,500 new compounds enter the market every year. And while toxic ones are eventually phased out, those deemed safe are not thoroughly tested for long-term cumulative effects on humans. To lower your risk and health issues, I suggest avoiding artificial additives when you can. Prepare food using fresh ingredients whenever possible, and try to eat less packaged foods. That article was Natural Fixes, The Truth About Food Additives by Andrew Wild, M.D. The next article is Meet Your Uterus by Adele Jackson Gibson. The nurturer of life and the source of those visits from Aunt Flo, it's an organ of wonder and sometimes discomfort. 1. Baby's first carrier. The womb is designed to foster the growth of a soon-to-be bundle of joy, even if you don't opt to use it for that purpose. It's a hollow organ behind the bladder, made up of three layers of serosa, the outer layer of the myometrium, the muscles, an initiate of contractions in the middle, and the endometrium, the inner lining that ushers blood and nutrients to an egg if it's fertilized. Refresher for middle school health. Over the course of a menstrual cycle, which normally ranges from 21 to 35 days, the endometrium thickens to prep for pregnancy. If an embryo doesn't show up to become embedded in that tissue, the uterus contracts and sheds the lining, and what comes out is the reason you dig into the stash under the sink every month. Thank goodness for pads, cups, tampons, and period panties. 2. What's cramping your style? Ah, yes, those cramps we'd all rather do without, which hit when the levels of the hormone prostaglandin spike and trigger contractions. This hormone can also slow down your intestines, which is why you may be gassy around your period. If this is you, take an ibuprofen as soon as you start to bleed. It can block prostaglandin, decrease the cramps, and reduce your flow by 10% to 20%. We wish we could say uterine issues stop once your period does, but that's not always the case. Childbirth, smoking, and genetic factors can weaken the muscle supporting the organ and cause the uterus to drop, called prolapse. This can get worse during menopause. It's not usually dangerous, but may be uncomfortable. Talk to your MD about how to manage prolapse. Medical and surgical options are available. 3. Track your cycle. If you notice that your cycle is consistently out of whack, chat with your OB/GYN. Menstrual irregularities should not be blown off, as it could signify serious uterine health and fertility issues. For example, if you miss 3 or more periods in a row and aren't premenopausal, pregnant, or taking hormonal contraceptives, this may indicate a hormonal imbalance. If your period is abnormally heavy or achy, or you have spotting, you could have fibroids, benign growths, endometriosis, a condition in which the uterine lining grows outside the uterus, an abnormal buildup of tissue, possibly uterine cancer. Even if you never miss a month, keep up your yearly gyno checks so your doc will be able to detect early signs of any problem before it gets out of hand. That article was Meet Your Uterus by Adele Jackson Gibson. The next article is Problem Solved, Chapped Lips by Richard Liliberte. It can be pesky and painful part of winter. Chapped lips, which can actually split when you crack a smile. That's because lip skin is thinner and has fewer oil glands than our other skin on your bodies. So it's especially prone to dryness, peeling, flaking, and cracking. It's also more susceptible to irritation from chemicals, allergens, acids, dry weather, and sunlight. Lips are well supplied by blood vessels, so they heal quickly, says Sarah Hogan, MD, a dermatologist at UCLA Medical Center in Santa Monica, California. But high cell turnover can cause scaling, and if you pick or bite off the excess skin, it can make chapped lips worse. Take these steps to keep your lips sealed. Prevent it. Get your vitamins. Eat foods rich in vitamin B, nutrients that are critical to healthy skin that help skin cell production. Leafy greens, whole grains, salmon, chickpeas, and oranges are all good picks. If you experience persistent tingling in your lips, see your doctor. They can test for deficiencies in nutrients such as vitamin B12 or iron, and may advise you to start taking a supplement if needed. Avoid irritants. Products like toothpaste, lipstick, and lip balm often contain ingredients that trigger allergies or irritation that can cause chapping. If you know your lips are sensitive and often chapped, look for fragrance-free lip products and toothpaste made for sensitive teeth, which are easier on the lip as well, says Dr. Hogan. Tame stress. People with anxiety may bite or lick their lips more frequently. Biting may create micro tears, and overlicking can trigger exfoliation, two issues that can lead to dryness and chapping, says Daval Bansali, MD, a clinical instructor in dermatology at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Find chill-out tactics that work for you and be sure to get enough rest. Sleep helps reduce stress hormone levels, and night is a time when skin cells regenerate. Treat it. Moisturize your lips. Smear your lips with petroleum jelly to create a protective barrier that seals in moisture, or choose a moisturizing lip product that contains zinc oxide or titanium dioxide and has an SPF of 30 or higher to protect your pucker from the sun's UV rays. Avoid exfoliating lip scrubs, which can aggravate irritation, chapping, says Dr. Hogan. Try a stronger topical. Over-the-counter hydrocortisone, 1%, can help reduce inflammation and promote healing. Be sure to talk to your dermatologist for guidance before you start treatment, though as a prolonged use can lead to skin thinning. Review your meds. Ask your doctor if any of your medications cause dry lips. Common culprits include isotretinoin for acne, lithium for bipolar disorder, and propranolol for high blood pressure. But don't stop taking them on your own. Your prescriber may be able to switch you to a different medication class or adjust the dose so your lips are less irritated, Dr. Hogan says. That article was Problem Solved, Chapped Lips by Richard Laliberte. That concludes today's reading for December 8th, 2020's episode of Prevention Magazine. This has been Herbert Gilmore for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast, followed by the Noon Book Hour at 12.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 47 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 30s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 11 a.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Mary Ellen. Thank you for joining me. Beginning today with Delish. People are building charcuterie chalets this holiday season, by Caitlin Fitzpatrick. If your ideal Friday night dinner consists of a charcuterie board and a bottle of wine, we have something in common. In fact, it's become such a beloved bite to pick at that people are ditching gingerbread houses this Christmas in favor of something more cheesy. Prepare to get creative while you put together a charcuterie chalet. Many families make it a tradition around the holidays to build, decorate, and display a gingerbread house. While cookie walls are great and all, adults might appreciate the charcuterie version even more. Think cracker walls, a prosciutto and salami roof, and cheese details. Just like there aren't any rules when making a charcuterie board,